Now our view soars over a snowy forest to a lakeside town. Titles appear. Fallen Angel. Gary Sinise is Terry. Jolie Richardson is Catherine. Now a young boy walks his bicycle down a desolate, icy road.
I suppose our lives are really just a collection of moments. Some moments tell us who we are. Others, what we might have been.
A police car eases to a stop beside the boy. More titles. Gordon Consent, Jordy Benatar, Michael Rhodes.
Hey!
Hey, Chief.
It's the birthday boy. You going anywhere in particular, Terry?
Going to see my dad.
Your old man was supposed to come fishing with me before it got too cold.
He's working.
Well, someday. When he's not working, okay?
Okay.
All right. Happy birthday.
This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Dutch Priest, Matthew Christofferson, and Matthew Lane. Read by Pat Lentz. Later, Terry rides up to a 5-foot-high stone wall and climbs over it.
I marked my 9th birthday at the moment I tried to cross the distance dividing my father and me. I went looking for my father in a world he kept separate from me. The world of summer people who came to Rose Point.
On the other side, Terry jogs up a driveway. He finds a man hosing a sheet of ice.
My father worked as their caretaker, opening their mansion cottages at the end of May each year and maintaining them through the long Maine winters. It was a place where people named their houses North Winds, Fairhaven, Kettle Cove, and here, Serenity Cottage.
Some men are making money right now. Making ice. What are you doing there? You lost? Thought you were going to the carousel.
I thought maybe we could go together.
Can't. Got work to do. See, I have a job. And these people, they can take away my job just like...
He stopped spraying.
That. Then where would we be,
Poor.
You got it. The Wentworth family is coming up to Serenity Cottage for Christmas again. They want a skating rink.
Where'd they come from?
New York City. It's backwards, you know? There's no heat, the pipes will freeze. I guess people are just silly sometimes. Anyway, I have a mountain to climb to get this place ready.
Can I help?
Terry's father shuts off the nozzle and looks at his boy. Later, in town, a sign reading Markham Hardware adorns a weather-worn building. Inside, Terry approaches his father at the register.
What do these people think they're doing? Don't they know it's winter up here yet?
Wonder.
Summer people. Supposed to migrate with the birds. Shouldn't have a deal with again until June.
Terry smirks at the cashier. Now, Terry follows his father into a workshop.
Get the door,
His gaze sweeps the single large room crammed with littered tool shelves and workbenches. Terry opens a rectangular wooden box and lifts fishing tackle from inside.
Hey, don't touch anything.
Terry drops a reel as his father shuts the box.
Look, this isn't a place for kids.
Terry wanders away.
His shop was my father's kingdom, a place where my mother, when she was alive, had never been welcomed. This was the center of his life, and I longed to be a part of it.
Terry picks up a tool. His father gives him a quick look, and Terry puts it down. Later, as Terry's father removes a sheet of plywood from Serenity Cottage's front door, Terry peeks in the window. The craftsman unlocks the front door, and his son enters, crossing the foyer to a living room. Furniture shapes bulge beneath white sheets. As he looks around the room, a smile creeps over Terry's face, framed by his woolly collar and tight-fitting toboggan cap.
Son?
His father motions him to a sofa and they sweep the sheet off its patterned upholstery. Now, Terry watches his father saw an evergreen tree.
Stay clear. Top. Got it?
Got it.
Terry grabs the snowy branches of the 8-foot tree, then he and his father carry it from the snow-covered forest. Later, snow falls past a large window above the cottage's stone archway. Inside, Terry and his father decorate the tree with Christmas ornaments. Now, in dull light of early morning, Terry and his father sit at breakfast.
First thing we gotta do is them shutters at Serenity. Make sure you dress warm now.
Yep.
Morning, Mac.
Morning.
The chief enters.
You want some coffee?
Oh, that's all right. I just stopped by to drop something off.
For me?
He hands Terry a present.
Maybe you should wait for Christmas to open that, hmm?
Nah, go ahead and open it now. It's a birthday present, too.
Terry unwraps a book-sized leather case.
Wow, a fingerprinting kit.
Just like the ones we use at the station.
Holding an ink pad, Terry thumbs through sheets of paper divided into 10 boxes.
Now we gotta get going.
Yeah, go out and freeze to death, you two.
What do you say?
Thanks, Chief.
Ah, you're welcome, son. You go and keep your old man in line now.
Now, a long white sedan pulls up the drive to Serenity Cottage. Terry and Mac get out of their truck.
Well, come on. Let's get him settled.
They watch as a woman in a fur-collared leather coat gets out of the passenger side. The driver lifts a little girl from the back seat.
Where are we?
Freezing.
Serenity!
I don't know why I let you talk me into this.
Here we are. Yep.
They all enter the cottage.
Everything looks great, Mac.
Terry follows the family into the spacious living room.
Thanks, Mac. Thanks a million.
Sure.
And you? You must be your father's right-hand man, Charles Wentworth.
I'm Terry McQuinn.
A strong handshake. That's good. How old are you, son?
9.
Wow. Are you tall for your age? This is my daughter, Catherine. And she's... You want to tell Terry how old you are, Teapot?
Mm-hmm. I'm 4.
Catherine shakes Terry's hand vigorously. Mrs. Wentworth wanders through the room, gives her husband a cold look, and continues on. Kneeling on the floor, Charles holds his daughter's hands.
Hey. So, what do you want for Christmas, son?
I already got this. It's a fingerprinting kit.
Wow, look at that. Teapot? Should we give Terry our fingerprints?
Terry lays out the ink and paper.
Put your thumb here.
Charles presses his daughter's thumb in the first box.
Press. Do mine.
Okay. And your other finger's there.
All right. Okay. Fingerprint.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Boom.
Boom.
Yeah. Look how pretty yours are.
Terry rips out the page.
Here, you want to keep them?
Thank you. You know what? I'm going to put these in a safe place.
Are we going to see the sick children, Daddy?
Yes, we are, sweetheart. You know what? I want you to go upstairs. I want you to wash the ink off your hands. I'll be right down. Okay? Excuse me, Mac. I'll be right back.
Sure.
Come on, sweetheart. Let's get those hands washed and something warm to drink.
Catherine waves to Terry as her mother carries her off. As Mac gathers newspaper by the fireplace, he looks back at his son. Later, he places a screen in front of a roaring fire and picks up his jacket.
Don't remember it being this cold.
Wait, your man.
Charles enters dressed as Santa Claus.
Oh, not that again. My husband has been apologizing for my money ever since he began spending it. But he makes up for it on the tennis court, don't you, dear? And the golf course. He used to be an all-American football
hero. That's enough, dear. That's enough. Hey, Mac, let your son come with us? It's a tradition of mine. Every Christmas, we try and cheer up the children at the hospital. Come on, we won't be gone long. Oh, come on, Mac, it's Christmas. Christmas is a time for children, right?
Terry stands beside Charles as Mac reluctantly looks them over.
Come on.
Now, a nurse exits a hospital into flurrying snow. Terry and Catherine exit Charles's sedan.
Come on, Teapot!
As Charles enters the hospital holding Catherine's hand, two nurses follow him with armfuls of presents. Among the group, Terry grins, now in the children's ward.
Oh! Oh, oh, oh! Are there children in here? Oh, you look like you need a Christmas present.
Charles takes a brightly wrapped present from his sack and hands it to a boy in a wheelchair. Terry and Catherine take presents to children in bed as Charles distributes more gifts. The young patients tear into the gifts.
Merry Christmas! Get this kid a present! Thank you!
A girl shows Terry a wooden case of art supplies. Later, Charles drives down a dark road through pounding snow. He glances in the rearview mirror at the two kids seated in back.
Can you skate, son?
Not really.
I have skates.
That's right. She can really fly across the ice, can't you, Teapot?
Mm-hmm. You taught me, Daddy.
We'll be back at the cottage in no time.
Later, the sedan curves around a bend. Charles spots flashing taillights ahead. He swerves, avoiding the car. The sedan skids out of control.
Katie! Katie!
Catherine huddles against Terry as the car spins sideways and slams into a snowbank. Trembling, Charles looks back over the seat.
Are you all right? Are you all right?
Terry stares back, his lips trembling. Catherine cowers against him. Charles holds his gloved hand over his forehead a moment, then gets out of the car. Squinting against the storm, he trudges back along the side of the road. His gaze falls upon a woman lying on her back with a child's body resting atop her chest. Blood trickles from the woman's mouth as snow flurries over her. Charles falls to his knees, his breath heaving out in foggy clouds. He runs his hands through his hair and weeps. Later, an ambulance and police cars idle in the snow beside the Wentworth sedan. As paramedics wheel a gurney to the ambulance, the sheriff talks with one deputy. Charles sits in the back of a police car with his hands covering his face. He looks ahead as the paramedics load a body bag into the ambulance. Meanwhile, Terry and Catherine watch from the back of the sedan. A single-strap patent leather shoe dangles off the little girl's foot.
It's okay. Let me help you, Catherine.
He adjusts her shoe, then leans close to her teary face.
Gonna be okay.
Now, Charles watches the ambulance doors close, then spots officers surveying his car's path. Still in his Santa suit, Charles hypnotically gets out of the squad car. Taking jerky steps, he paces off the road toward a dark field. Barren trees flank his path as the falling snow swirls around him. Mr. Wentworth walks off into the night. Later, Mac hurries past a grandfather clock to his front door. The sheriff and Terry wait outside on the porch.
What happened? Woman's dead. Her child's in surgery now. They broke down by the side of the road. Wentworth's car ran over him. He's disappeared.
Disappeared?
We're out looking for him now.
Mac looks down at his son.
Thank you. Bring him home.
As the sheriff exits the covered porch, Mac closes the door and faces his son.
Shouldn't have been in that man's car. Look, someday you'll know who you are. Where you belong.
Frowning, Terry watches his father walk off.
There were a lot of prayers that Christmas. Prayers that the child would survive. Prayers that Mr. Wentworth would be found. None of the prayers was answered.
Now, Mac watches movers carry boxes out of Serenity Cottage.
Mrs. Wentworth had my father close the place that winter. He never took me to work with him again.
Now, an athletic young man approaches Mac's house.
Hey, Terry, nice speech.
The teenager waves a diploma, then jogs up the walkway to his home. Inside, Terry looks around, then frowns. He drapes a graduation gown over the banister, balances his mortarboard cap beside it, and sets down his diploma. Later, Terry rides a 10-speed bike up to the gates of Rose Point. He lets the bike drop, then hops over the wall and marches up the drive. Now, a gentle breeze blows off a lake onto a columned porch decorated with ferns and flower boxes. Guests drink from wine glasses and champagne flutes. Terry walks up to the porch, brushing past the well-dressed guests, and enters the cottage. He weaves past serving maids and more guests inside. Entering the kitchen, he finds his father working with two men in aprons. He crosses his arms as Mac removes bags of ice from a freezer.
Dad? Hey, what are you doing here?
Hey,
Thanks for coming.
Oh, no. That ceremony over already.
He checks his watch, then moves to the sink.
Should have known better than to expect you to be there.
Yeah, well, Mr. Jacoby called me, and I just didn't think it would take me this long.
Couldn't he get one of his other lackeys to get ice for him?
Glancing at Terry, an aproned man exits with an hors d'oeuvre tray.
What did you say?
You heard me.
Mac looks his son up and down, then brushes past him.
Climbing over that gate?
You can get arrested for that. We've never had a criminal in this family before.
We've never had a family.
Never had a family.
Mac grabs another bag of ice.
What have I been working for all my life? A bunch of people that don't care about you.
I've spent my entire life providing for you.
Wow, Dad. You did a great job.
You get out of here. You get out of here now and don't ever bother me at work again.
Yeah. I better let you go. I think I hear Mr. Jacoby calling. I hope you get a big tip for this.
You know what your problem is? You think you're better than me.
Oh, I will be.
As Terry storms out, guests in the dining room cast concerned glances into the kitchen. Mac averts his eyes. Morning. Mac sits at his kitchen table eating scrambled eggs as he scans a newspaper. At the front door, Terry shoulders a large duffel bag and carries a smaller one with a jacket draped across it to the kitchen. He leans against the doorframe.
Shoving off, Pop.
Mac swallows, then takes another fork full of eggs. Terry nods.
Try and keep in touch.
Mac's head turns toward the door as Terry exits. He faces his plate, sighing deeply. Outside, Terry strides away from the porch.
That day, I took a vow that I would be a better man than my father. I wouldn't lose sight of the things that are important.
Now a middle-aged Terry paces in his posh office.
Charlie, that outline you sent over is totally unacceptable. Bill Sanders is never going to approve it. Now I need to hear back from you ASAP, and if you can't reach me here, try me on my cell. I want to hear back from you right away.
He removes a headset as a smiling businessman enters.
Hey, Bill, what's up? That was
Chandler deal got the green light.
Well, I told you not to worry.
That takes care of your weekend. Sorry.
Don't be.
I'll talk to you later, Terry.
All right.
Later.
Wendy, there it is. I need that by noon.
As he passes a folder to an office worker, a suited man joins him.
Six girls from the typing pool in the Swiss Alps. Oh, well, that sounds like Christmas to me.
I can't.
Why not?
Too much work.
Deck the halls of piles of money, huh?
Do they still have typing pools?
Nighttime, in his office, Terry sits at his desk in his shirt sleeves. He faces his laptop, typing quickly. Terry glances at the phone and keeps working. He answers it.
Terry McQuinn.
Hello, Terry. It's your father. My doctor wants to speak with you.
Terry leans back in his chair and listens. Twilight. A plane lands at an airport. Daytime. Terry enters a hospital and approaches the reception desk. A woman in scrubs smiles at him.
Hi, my father's a patient here.
His name, please?
McQuinn.
She enters the name on her computer and glances up from the screen.
I'm sorry, I'm not finding him. How do you spell that?
McQuinn. That's the last name.
Oh, I'm sorry. I better call his doctor for you. Your father...
Terry shifts on his feet and lifts his eyebrows.
He died.
I'm sorry.
Terry glances away uncomfortably. He nods to the woman and walks away. Standing in the waiting area, he gazes toward the floor. Now, snow covers the lawn in front of Mac's two-story house. Inside, Terry wanders around as a man with a clipboard points to the grandfather clock.
This is a very nice piece. This should get a good price.
Terry steps into another room.
Mr. McQuinn, did you have a list of things you'd like to keep?
I haven't been back here in 20 years. You can sell it all.
The auction house could write you a check for $5,000 for the whole lot.
Terry sizes up the auction house worker.
$7,500.
I'll have to check.
I want everything out of here by the end of the week so the realtor can start showing the place.
That would be no problem, sir.
On a sideboard, a half dozen Christmas cards sit on display. Terry picks up one, reads it, and lays it back down. He opens a bureau drawer, glances inside, slides it shut, and opens another. Atop a disorderly pile of photos lies a framed picture of Terry as a child in the arms of a smiling, dark-haired woman. Terry picks it up and eyes it closely.
I never saw this.
Is that your mother?
The auction house worker steps closer. Terry glances up at him.
She died when I was little. I thought my father got rid of all her photos after that. He never wanted any up.
The auction house worker watches Terry study the photograph. Now, on a country highway, Terry drives a Lincoln Town Car past Lakeside Homes. He fixes his gaze on the road ahead. Later, he slows to a stop as a bulldozer crosses the road in front of him. Workers wearing orange vests and yellow hard hats carry barriers with bright stripes and sawhorse mounts. Another worker regulates traffic. In the stopped town car, Terry stares at his mother's photo lying on the passenger seat. The traffic regulator turns the sign from stop to slow. Terry's car stays put.
Hey, Sleeping Beauty! Hey, you can't sit here!
She taps on Terry's car window. Terry rolls down the window.
Can I turn around here?
The woman shrugs.
You'll be my guest.
Thanks.
Terry makes a U-turn and heads back. Now at Rose Point, Terry parks at the wrought iron gates. Now he climbs over the wall, drops to the ground, and straightens his dress overcoat. Wearing gloves, Terry walks across the grounds to the caretaker's workshop. He gazes at the little brick building. Firewood, an old shutter, and other worn items rest on its small porch. Terry opens the workshop door and peers at its cluttered tables. Later, he lifts the cover of the rectangular wooden box and picks up the fishing reel. Terry turns it in his fingers, then drops it back in the box. Wandering around the large workspace, he pushes a hanging light with his finger. As it swings, he eyes a coat slung on a hook and a wooden support beam. Later, Terry hammers a nail into another beam. He hangs up his mother's picture and gently straightens it on the unpainted wood. He eyes it wistfully, then a small smile crosses his lips. Later, Terry stands at a desk facing a window. Four work orders hang on a wire strung over it. Terry pulls them off and glances at the handwritten memos on each. His eyes narrow as he peers at the last. It reads, "Open Serenity Cottage for Christmas," and gives a phone number. Later, Terry walks across the grounds.
I walked towards Serenity Cottage, thinking how far I'd ventured from this place and the person I'd been when I'd last seen it. The years now seem to have gone by in a flash. I wonder if my father had felt the same loss at the end, if he'd been surprised at how quickly his time had passed.
Terry gazes at the boarded-up cottage. Nighttime. In the workshop, Terry gazes at the Serenity work order and dials the desk phone.
Please leave your number for my mommy.
All right. I'm calling from Rose Point. Here's the number. It's 207-555-0139 for your mommy.
Terry gives a tight-lipped smile.
Okay.
He hangs up. Later, sitting in front of his open briefcase, Terry rolls up his shirt sleeves, removes a document, and reads. As he glances at the work order beside him, he lowers the document. Terry picks up the work order and puts the legal document down. He gazes at the writing on the Serenity Cottage work order, then lays it aside. He picks up a pen and returns his focus to the legal document. Morning. Terry sleeps in his clothes on a cot in the corner of the workshop. He props himself up and rubs his eyes. Terry pulls a wool blanket from over him and gets up. He crosses the room and answers the desk phone.
Hello.
Hi, I'm returning a call to Mr. McQuinn. There was a message you left last night.
Yeah, that was me, yes.
The telephone cord spills a tray of tools. As he tries to catch it, a carpet knife cuts into his hand.
Is everything okay, Mr. McQuinn?
I'm not Mr. McQuinn. I mean, I'm not the Mr. McQuinn who's opening your cottage for you. I'm his son.
His son? When I spoke with your father, he didn't tell me he had a son working with him.
I'm not working with him. I'm here from California because my father died.
Mr. McQuinn died?
Yes.
I just spoke with your father on Monday.
The blonde grips her phone.
I'm so sorry.
How well did you know my father?
I didn't know him. I've never been to Rose Point. We just spoke on the phone.
I'm leaving. I was supposed to leave last night. I'm just trying to tie up some loose ends here.
You'll have to find someone else to open your cottage for you if you're coming for Christmas.
He eyes the cut on his hand.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go here. I'll try and call you back later.
Okay. I'm so sorry. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
He hangs up. Later, exiting a hospital emergency room, Terry examines a freshly wrapped bandage around his palm. Looking up, he spots a holiday poster reading, "Christmas is for the children." Elsewhere in the hospital, a nurse pushes a child in a wheelchair. Nearby, Terry exits an elevator and looks around. A woman at the nurse's station spots him.
May I help you, sir?
I wanted to buy some presents for the children for Christmas.
There's a tree for presents down the corridor.
Terry nods and steps down the hall. White lights, bright red bulbs, and garland adorn a small Christmas tree with stacks of presents under it. Terry lifts a few of them and reads the labels. To Timmy from Charles Wentworth. To Dan from Charles Wentworth. To Chris from Charles Wentworth. A doctor with a stethoscope around her neck approaches with a box of bulbs.
Would you like to contribute to the children's gift fund?
Terry stands and faces her.
I knew a man named Charles Wentworth.
She glances toward the gifts.
Did you?
Yeah, I came to this hospital with him one Christmas Eve a long time ago. We brought presents for the kids. That was the last time I saw him.
30 years ago on Christmas Eve, after Charles Wentworth delivered gifts for the children, there was a bad accident.
You remember?
She decorates the tree with shiny bulb ornaments.
I was on shift when the little girl came in. That poor family. And Charles. He came to work here a few years after that. We became great friends.
Is he still here?
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to mislead you. Charles is dead. Now, since he passed away, we established this fund, and every year at Christmas, we bring gifts for the children. In his memory.
She extends her hand.
Hey, can I show you something?
She points down the corridor.
Come on.
Terry nods and she leads him into a supply room.
I first met Charles right in here. He was standing here holding his mop and he was gazing out those windows. You know, he worked nights and every once in a while I'd find him here on his breaks.
She opens Venetian blinds.
He swore he could see the lights of Rose Point from here.
She gazes out the window, then lowers the blinds.
Well, that's not possible.
Do you know why he ran away? The police ruled it was an accident. There were no charges against him.
He was lost.
He disappeared.
The doctor gazes intensely at Terry and moves closer to him.
Charles killed a woman and her child. I think he would have taken his own life if it hadn't been for his daughter. He kept hoping he'd see her again. Of course, there was never any chance of that.
Why not?
His wife divorced him, took the child away. And he agonized over that. And then one evening, he just didn't show up for work. And I thought, well, that's my fault. I finally pushed him too hard.
She shrugs and lowers her gaze sadly.
But then his brother came. Told me he died. It was a heart attack.
She smiles and tears well in her eyes. Terry nods. Now at Markham Hardware, Terry walks through a narrow aisle to a smiling man with a long black ponytail working behind the counter.
Hey, how are you?
Good, you?
I'm all right, thanks. I could use some help.
That's what we're here for. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm looking for someone who could open up one of the cottages out at Rose Point.
Might be able to find somebody. I'll ask around. What's your name?
Terry McQuinn. My father was caretaker out there.
Mac?
Terry nods.
Oh, I'm real sorry about your dad.
Thanks. There's a work order in my father's shop to open up a Serenity Cottage for Christmas.
Yeah, he was in here on Monday telling me about it. After all these years, Wentworth daughter's coming back.
The daughter?
Terry gazes intensely at the clerk. Now, Terry walks past a rustic, unpainted fence to Serenity Cottage. Approaching its stone arched entrance, Terry gazes up toward the boarded windows on the second floor. As Terry steps onto the porch, he notices a mailbox hanging askew. Its woodcraft design is a miniature of the cottage, complete with a stone facade arch, shingled porch roof, and white window frames. As Terry tries to straighten the mailbox, it falls. Its lid splinters, and the crafted facade breaks apart as it hits the stairs. Terry picks up the pieces. Later, in the workshop, Terry tests the hinged lid of the restored mailbox. Taking a step back, he smiles proudly to himself. He answers his cell phone.
Yeah. Wendy. Can you hear me? I'm still in Maine.
Yeah, I know. The contract.
I know. Look, there are 14 different things I'm supposed to do in the office
right.
Today, but look, I'm thinking of staying here for a few days. There's some work here.
Terry, look, don't
Wendy. Can you hear me?
It's every day. Can you hear me?
Hold on. I'm losing you. Hold on.
He grabs his jacket.
I'm gonna go outside.
He steps out on the porch.
Hold on.
He puts on his jacket as he walks away from the shop.
Can you hear me? Wendy? Look, you're breaking up. Let's just put all my calls on voicemail and I'll check in later. Yeah.
Okay. Terry ends the call and turns to face the cottage. A light points in his direction from the front porch. Terry watches a gray-haired man remove the boards from the front door and go inside. Narrowing his eyes, Terry heads across the yard. Inside the cottage, the gray-haired man ascends the first flight of stairs, illuminating his path with a flashlight. Outside, Terry breaks into a jog. On the second floor, the old man opens a door and starts up a narrow flight of steps. Behind him, Terry stops on a landing, keeping an eye on the stranger. The gray-haired man reaches the top of the stairs with heavy steps. Below, Terry furtively starts up the narrow staircase. The stranger approaches a door and pulls out a set of keys. Holding the flashlight in one hand, he tries a key and the door is locked. Frowning, he selects another. From around a corner, Terry watches the man try key after key. The man abruptly turns his gaze toward the stairs, and Terry ducks his head back around the corner. The stranger aborts his attempt at the locked door and quickly heads downstairs. Outside, the old man gets behind the wheel of a 4x4. Terry slips out of the cottage, watches the stranger drive off, then jogs toward the workshop. Now, Terry drives the town car down the highway and parks alongside a Ford Bronco outside a large wooden building. A sign above the colorful entryway reads, Carousel. Terry enters through double doors and walks through the dim light toward a merry-go-round, its brass poles and wooden horses cloaked in shadows. Terry eyes the varnished horses in the dark. The room fills with light. The gray-haired man smiles.
People say I should sell this place, but I'm not smart enough.
The gray-haired man comes out from behind a wooden counter and approaches Terry.
You followed me from Rose Point.
I saw a light.
I was helping the man open the cottage.
My father?
The gray-haired man eyes Terry closely.
You're Mac's boy?
I am.
Well, that's something. He and I were talking about you just the other day. I'm gonna miss him. My name's Warren.
They shake hands.
Terry. I remember spending a lot of time here when I was a kid.
Your father rebuilt most of these carousel horses for me. He charged me a small fortune for the work. But, he was worth it.
Yeah, he was good at what he did.
Oh, yeah, he was the best.
Warren fills a mug from a thermos.
So, you came home.
I won't be here long, and I'm going back to L.A. in the next few days.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to stay around here. This time of year, there's nothing but cold here. Oh, yeah, you catch your plane tomorrow. I can take care of the cottage for Mac. Nothing I can't handle there.
As Warren opens the front doors, Terry studies him.
So, my father never told you, I guess, but Serenity Cottage has quite a history.
No, really?
He turns away, nodding. Terry looks skyward.
You don't see stars like this where I live. Too much smog.
Warren smiles.
Oh, good night.
Yeah.
Terry shakes his hand and leaves. Later in the workshop, Terry talks on the phone.
12 bedrooms?
And a locked gate.
That sounds dreadful.
Well, I've rigged it to stay open. Eventually I'll find the key.
And your father sent us keys.
Oh, that's good. I never asked you your name.
Catherine.
Catherine.
Are you sure it's not going to be too much of an imposition? Olivia and I...
Olivia, your daughter?
My sleeping beauty. She's on my lap, snoring away.
How old is she?
6. Do you have any children?
No.
A friend of my father's has offered to open the cottage for you, but I was thinking that I may stay around a few days to help him out.
Oh, that would be very kind of you. We're so excited. I've been telling Olivia that our main days are going to be live-over days.
Days so wonderful, you want to live them over again? Anyway, I'll let you go.
Have a safe trip home.
Yes, good night.
Bye.
Terry hangs up the phone. He walks over to a work table. A black overnight bag rests on top. As Terry unzips the bag and pulls out a smaller case, his gaze fixes on the coat hanging on the hook. He sets down the case and approaches the green and plaid garment.
As a boy, I stood in this room with my father, and I had dreamed of one day becoming him.
Terry takes down the coat.
That was before we became so angry at one another.
He puts his arm through one sleeve and slides it on. With a furrowed brow, Terry places his hands in the coat pockets. Now, upstairs in the cottage, Terry heads down a hallway to the locked door. He jiggles the knob, then backs away and wipes his mouth. Placing both hands on the knob, Terry slams his body into the door. He slams again, harder, breaking through. Inside, piled chairs and furniture lie in a corner. Against the wall, several framed photographs decorate the top of a shelving unit. Terry eyes the pictures and approaches. In one photo, Charles Wentworth hugs his wife. In another, Charles plays golf with Catherine. Terry narrows his eyes and focuses on a small brown box beside the pictures. He removes a framed black and white photograph of Catherine sitting on her father's lap. As he studies it, Warren enters.
You knew these were here.
These photographs, all of these pictures, your father saved 30 years ago before the movers could take them away. When he showed me these pictures for the first time, he said that nobody should ever be completely forgotten in this world.
Terry shifts his gaze.
Your father and I had an argument after he got word to open up the place again for Christmas. I said we should take all of these things away.
Why?
Sometimes things are better left the way they are.
Do you think he saved these things in case she ever came back?
Warren shakes his head.
I don't know.
Terry looks again at the black and white photograph.
Imagine my old man caring about these things. I talked to a woman at the hospital who knew Charles Wentworth. She told me he died.
Warren bows his head and presses his lips together.
So, what do you say, son? You want me to take over from here so you can catch your plane? There's nothing here that I can't handle by myself.
Terry eyes the older man.
You're probably right. I'd just hire you to open the cottage and head back home.
Terry faces Warren with a small smile.
But I'd like to stay a few more days. Get things started with you. You know, it's amazing, but I'm actually enjoying getting some dirt on my hands for a change.
Huh? Whatever you think is best.
Terry nods. Later, Terry leads Warren into the workshop, flips the light switch, and sets down a toolbox.
Looks like I'll have to get me a different coat.
As Terry removes his gloves and heads to the wood stove, Warren unzips his coat and approaches the fixed mailbox.
I spent half the night working on that. My father might not be too impressed.
Don't sell yourself short.
Belongs to Serenity Cottage.
Warren glances up from the mailbox, fixes his eyes on a post, and approaches.
Never saw this picture before.
He points to the photo of Terry and his mother.
You may be too young to remember, but after your mother became ill, your father brought her to ride the carousel every Saturday morning.
Terry knits his brow.
Did he?
Warren nods. Now in Markham Hardware.
Hey, so you stuck around for a while?
Yeah. Decided to stay and open the cottage for Catherine Wentworth. Didn't exactly bring the right clothes from California.
Well, good for you. That's a big job.
Yeah, but I got some help. A friend of my father's named Warren.
Warren Wentworth.
Terry heads to the counter.
What did you say?
Warren, the old-timer from the carousel? Charles Wentworth's brother.
Now at the carousel, Warren leans over the control box. Behind him, Terry weaves through the horses and leans on one of the poles.
You're a bad liar.
Warren straightens and gazes at him.
I always was.
You want to tell me the truth?
As Terry glares at him, the older man steps off the carousel.
I wish you hadn't come home from California. It's no offense to you. I don't mean to hurt you in any way. But this isn't easy for anybody.
What isn't easy?
Warren throws a rag onto a table and faces Terry.
The truth.
Now on a city street, a car rolls over a puddle. With Terry in the passenger seat, Warren steers his Ford Bronco into an underground parking garage. As he pulls the Bronco into a spot along the wall and turns off the ignition, Terry glances out the window. Women wearing dresses and men in suits exit their vehicles.
Symphony is on tonight. Another half hour, I'd say.
Warren and Terry remain in the Bronco. Behind them, a couple walks through the garage arm in arm. Their image fades. As more cars park, two men exit a vehicle behind the Bronco, then fade away. Later, two more couples walk through the garage and their images fade, leaving the garage empty. Now, a group of vagrants dressed in hats, gloves, and blankets approach the parked cars. The disheveled men and women place their palms on the hoods of the vehicles. Terry watches from the Bronco as several vagrants lean their cheeks against the cars.
It's the warmth from the engines. I think of them as fallen angels spread out like that.
A bearded man lies against a hood and grins. Warren touches Terry's arm and points out the window.
There's my brother.
A tall man wearing construction boots and a heavy jacket crosses the garage. As he nods to another vagrant, Terry eyes the familiar man.
Charles Wentworth.
Charles approaches the hood of a car and puts down a pair of gloves. Terry faces Warren.
You told the woman in the hospital he was dead.
Yeah, Callie Bronson. Well, she tried to fix what couldn't be fixed. He came apart after he met her. He couldn't go back to work. I thought that would be best, but I don't know what's best. I don't know what's right. I don't know anything. You want to leave those photographs in the cottage for Catherine? You can. Roll down the window. Call to him. Tell him his daughter's coming up here to Rose Point for Christmas. I don't know. Do.
Warren shakes his head.
Do whatever's in your heart.
Terry stares at Charles' brother. As Warren shakes his head and frowns, Terry peers back out the window. Later in the workshop, the box of photographs sits next to the phone. Terry sits at the desk, staring at the black and white photograph of Charles and Catherine. Now at the carousel, Warren oils a small chain. Terry enters carrying the box of photographs and sets it down on the table beside him.
Why don't you hang on to these?
Warren nods and smiles. Now, outside the cottage, Terry talks on his cell phone.
Are you still at Rose Point?
Yes. I should be leaving in a few days. Look, I meant to ask you, what room did you sleep in when you came here as a child?
I'm sorry. I'm in the midst of a tickling fight with a little monster. I've never been to Rose Point. My mother closed the cottage after my father left her, just before I was born.
Your mother never brought you here?
No, too many painful memories, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, I see.
I want to talk to her, Mommy!
Catherine tickles her daughter, then hands her the phone.
Hello? We're excited, Terry McQuinn. Is there snow there?
Well, there's a little bit, and I'm sure there's going to be quite a bit more when you get here.
Okay.
Catherine takes the phone.
Oh, hi. Well, thanks for everything.
Don't mention it. I'll let you go then.
Okay. Good night.
As Terry closes his phone, his coat flaps in the night breeze. Now he attaches the mailbox to the stone entranceway of the cottage and lifts the lid. Terry smiles, puts his hands in his pockets, and walks away. Now snow falls past the large window above the cottage's stone archway. Inside, Terry decorates a tree with Christmas ornaments. He bends down and colorful bulbs light up on the tree. Later, outside, Terry hoses the frozen ground.
Some men are making money. I'm making ice.
Now an SUV sits parked in front of the cottage. Terry approaches.
What does it look like, Mommy?
The house is the color of the sky. It's all blue with windows everywhere and shutters.
Catherine kneels beside Olivia and a dog.
It has a huge porch and five chimneys that looks like a castle. It's really beautiful.
As Terry steps closer, Olivia turns around.
Hello. I thought we were alone here. Have you come to Maine for Christmas?
No, I'm Terry McQuinn.
Oh, you decided to stay.
I did.
Oh, I'm Catherine. Nice to meet you.
They shake hands.
This is my Olivia. That's Lawrence, our family friend and driver.
An older man nods.
Livy, this is the nice man who opened our house for us.
I remember you, Terry McQuinn.
Olivia stares off to Terry's right and holds out her mittened hand.
You do?
He shakes it.
Oh, from the phone.
Well, we'd better go in and get settled.
Yes.
It was a pleasure to finally meet you.
It's great to meet you.
Hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Catherine picks up Olivia and leads the dog toward the cottage. Terry holds a tight smile. Now Terry drives his town car down a city street. In an alley, vagrants gather around flaming barrels. Charles approaches one of them, carrying a shallow brown box. Terry pulls his car alongside the alley and lowers his window.
Do you want a sandwich?
As Terry watches, a woman takes wrapped food and a drink from the box. Charles offers food to a bearded man. Terry faces the steering wheel. Rolling up the window, he drives away. Now in the workshop, Terry dictates into a tape recorder.
Changes to paragraphs 1, 2, 9, and 12 are perfect, however.
Terry pauses the recorder and shifts his gaze.
However, I suggest we also make changes to the terms of compensation.
Terry stops the recorder. He throws a legal pad on the desk, opens the door, and heads out onto the porch. As he steps down into the snow, Terry knits his brow. Olivia stands outside the cottage wearing a winter coat. Holding the dog's leash, she faces the direction of the workshop. Snow flurries behind her. Terry rubs his arms and races back to the workshop. He grabs his coat and heads back outside. He puts on the garment and searches the property. Olivia and the dog are gone. As his breath appears in the air, Terry furrows his brow and eyes the snow-covered yard. With his hands in his pockets, he turns around and steps onto the porch. Pausing, Terry directs his gaze toward the cottage. Now at the wrought iron gate, Terry sprays a lubricant on a metal arm attached to the hinging mechanism. Catherine approaches with Olivia.
It's just over there.
Hello again.
Good morning.
It's Terry McQuinn.
Yes, it is. Was everything okay last night?
Yeah, you did so much work for us. I don't know how to thank you.
I had help. It was good work.
Olivia fingers the gate's welded flowers.
Good for the soul, you mean? Ah, but not for the hands. Are we to blame for that?
It's just my own stupidity.
I was thinking on the way up, you must have worked here as a boy with your father. You may have met my mother.
My father only brought me out here a couple of times. He didn't think I belonged out here.
Livy's been fascinated by the gate from the moment we first arrived. One of these keys opens it. I think it was the small one.
Oh, her mittened hand fumbles with them.
I dropped it.
Catherine and Terry crouch down, searching half-heartedly for the keys as they swap glances. Olivia approaches, reaches down, and picks the keys up in her gloved hand.
Here, Mommy.
Wonderful. Thank you, love.
You're welcome.
Here, you may want to make yourself a copy.
She flashes a quick smile.
Sure. I'll get this right back to you.
Okay. We've eaten, but have you had any breakfast?
I have, thanks. But I was actually hoping that you'd like to go with me on a little adventure.
An adventure? What did you have in mind?
I'd like to show you something.
Okay.
Now they drive a city street.
Were you warm enough last night?
We were fine. I spent most of the night walking from room to room. It was strange, but I couldn't get over this incredible sense of deja vu. My mother swears she never brought me here, but she revises history. She just told me about the place last month before she and her new husband left for Europe. I think it was because she felt guilty.
They park by an alley. Terry peers past Catherine's unknowing face to Charles outside the car among other vagrants.
You know what? I think I made a wrong turn here. I'm sorry.
In the back seat, Olivia's head turns in Charles's direction. The sedan leaves. Later, under a gray sky, they follow a paved country road.
Here, look what Olivia found last night.
It's the fingerprint card.
Lauren said there's someone's fingerprints. A little Sherlock Holmes must have stayed in the cottage once.
Terry looks away.
Here it is.
They pull up to the carousel. Inside, Terry hits a bulky switch and the warehouse lights come on. The painted ponies gleam. Another switch illuminates dozens of round white bulbs on the carnival ride.
Oh, Terry! Carousel! Olivia, what a special surprise for us. Thank you.
Olivia, there's a horse here that's been waiting for you to ride.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Come on.
Terry leads her by the hand.
I'm gonna lift you up, okay?
Okay.
Ready? Here you go. There you go.
Olivia feels the wooden horse.
This one has a pretty mane.
The girl pats the horse's lacquered face.
Can you feel that?
Yeah, it feels wavy. Bumpy. I wanted to go, Mommy.
Okay, teapot.
Well, a friend of mine runs this place, but he doesn't seem to be around.
Terry pulls a lever. As the ride starts, Catherine smiles at her daughter going gently up and down. Terry and Catherine wave to each other.
It's a magical carousel ride!
As the riders pass, Terry wears a wistful smile. The carousel's assorted horses and brightly painted sleigh turn round and round in the hay-strewn warehouse. Later, outside, the dog tries to yank a rag from Olivia's grip.
So how long's the cottage been in your family?
My understanding is that my mother's grandfather bought it after making a fortune inventing a machine that made shoelaces.
Shoelaces? Amazing.
Terry and Catherine watch Olivia play.
Does she see anything?
Not anymore. Up until the first year, she could see bright lights. I was teaching her colors, but we never finished. I don't know, Terry. There's a lot that is sad all around us, but I'm trying to teach Olivia that the world is still beautiful. I mean, bad things happen, but doesn't make a carousel ride any less magical.
I love the carousel, Terry McQuinn.
Well, I'm glad you did. You know, when I was a little boy, the carousel was my favorite thing in the world.
What's your favorite thing now in the world?
That's a good question.
Later at a boathouse.
I guess, Olivia, that I would have to say that my favorite thing in the world is the water.
What does the water look like here?
It seems to go out forever. And there's this island right out in the middle. It's called Pumpkin Island.
Oh, let's go there, Mommy.
Oh, sweetheart, it's wintertime. It's much too cold.
I'm not cold. Are you cold, Terry?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I'm not cold.
Please, Mommy.
We'll see.
Okay, we'll see.
Terry laughs to himself, then grins in Catherine's direction. Later, the workshop chimney pokes unused from the cabin stone addition. Inside, Terry starts a fire in the wood stove and closes its metal door. Tossing aside a rag, he finds an old wooden sled from behind the stove. He lifts it in his arms. The planks are dull and weathered, and chipping red paint fades on the metal runners. Later, an open parcel of contracts and documents lies untouched beside the sled. Terry's hand works a sanding block over the toy's wooden boards. Later, behind Serenity Cottage, Terry hoses water onto the skating pond.
You grew up in a beautiful place.
I ran away from here.
To find fame and fortune?
Oh, I don't know anymore. Just to be someplace far away from Maine. You know, when I was a kid, I was so determined to leave here, and now that I'm back, the reasons why I left are becoming less clear to me.
Don't we all try to escape where we came from one way or another?
You think so?
Yeah.
Catherine puts on skates.
My mother had all the money in the world, and yet she was unhappy. And all I wanted to do was to separate myself from that. Do something meaningful.
And what was that?
Social work. A far cry from Park Avenue.
You seem content?
Yeah. It's because of Olivia.
She's a beautiful little girl.
Yeah, she is. When I first met her, she was 9 months old, and she'd already been in 4 foster homes. Nobody wanted a blind baby. Not even my ex-fiancé. I took her in, fell in love. I couldn't give her away.
She's lucky to have you.
I'm the lucky one.
You know, Catherine, doing this work for you and Olivia, it's the nicest thing I've done in a long time.
Catherine nods, then smiles at the ice.
Should I give it a try?
Sure.
Sure, go on. Be careful.
Okay.
He helps her to her feet, then lets go.
How is it?
This is great. Listen, tonight in the city, they're doing Dylan Thomas's A Child's Christmas in Wales. Would you like to go with us? If you're not too tired from working.
I won't be too tired.
Good. We'll pick you up at 7:30.
Do I need my tux?
Absolutely.
Nighttime. In the city, Catherine's SUV turns down a ramp into the parking garage. As Lawrence finds a space and pulls into it, Terry glances out the window across the concrete structure. Melted droplets cover the SUV. Lawrence puts the car into park, and Terry and the others get out. As Catherine carries Olivia on her hip, Terry glances around intently.
Someone told me I might find some men down here to help clear the ice off the cottage roof. You can ride the elevator up from here, Olivia.
Terry shoots a sidelong glance to some parked cars where Charles chats among several other vagrants.
You go ahead. I'll be right there.
Catherine nods.
Mommy?
Terry leaves them and scans the gathering roamers.
Excuse me. Would any of you like to work for good wages?
Charles looks up, his eyes sparkling under his wavy gray hair. Terry approaches.
$10 an hour. More if you stay through Christmas.
Can I take some of these men with me?
Sure. Pick you up here in the morning.
What time?
7, okay?
Thank you.
Terry backs away, smiling. Charles's gaze finds the distant figures of Catherine and Olivia waiting at the elevator. He stares. Morning. Terry drives Charles.
Yeah, Wendy, it's Terry. I got your message last night. When you get in, you get this message. Tell Sanders I'm drafting a new version as we speak, and I'll get it to you right away. Okay, fine.
Terry peers at Charles in the front passenger seat. The aging man stares blankly forward as the Rose Point gate swings open before them. As they drive through, Olivia and her dog come into view, standing just off the slushy road. The dog wags his tail. Charles lowers his window. He gapes at the relaxed child, whose eyes blink peacefully as the car passes. Later, several men de-ice the gables on the cottage's waterfront side. Now a dock leads to a rowboat.
It's great that you found those men.
What men?
Terry has some nice men cleaning the roof of the cottage.
Why?
Well, so the roof doesn't leak and fall in.
It's gonna be freezing out there.
I'm not cold.
Olivia wears a life vest.
Oh, that's right. Terry, I didn't tell you. Olivia doesn't get cold, do you?
Never.
The dog hops on board with her.
Oh, well, not even the other night. When you and Jack were out walking?
Olivia, were you out by yourself?
No, Mommy, Jack was with me.
Honey, you know you're not meant to go out without me or Lawrence.
I'm sorry, Jack wanted to take a walk.
Jack always wants to take a walk. We'll talk about it later.
I think Jack really likes here.
I do too. How would you like to live here?
Terry works the outboard motor.
What about all my friends in New York?
We mean new friends here in Maine. Terry's our friend already.
Hold on.
In his own life vest, Terry pilots the boat toward Pumpkin Island.
Would you live here with us, Terry McQuinn? We've 12 big bedrooms. I canceled them.
From the cottage roof, Charles looks out from his safety cables and watches the boat skip across the choppy water. He resumes working. Later, on the island, a dock juts from an outcropping of smooth, eroded rock. As the boat cuts a slow path across the shimmering water, Jack eagerly steps onto the bow of the boat. Catherine holds his leash.
I feel like the Swiss Family Robinson.
Just tie it off up there.
On the dock, Catherine takes a line of rope in hand. Terry faces Olivia.
lift you out, Olivia?
Lift me, Terry.
Both smile as he lifts her onto the dock.
Oh. Hey, you know what? If I was Jack, I'd be so glad to have found a little girl like you.
Blind like me?
Catherine listens in.
Exactly like you.
A smile spreads on Catherine's lips.
Come on, Jack.
Terry and Olivia hold hands as they head ashore. Catherine gets Jack's leash and follows. Terry picks Olivia up. Carrying her on his hip, he walks down a few loose planks leading to shore. Later, moss grows on a twisted, wind-worn tree. As Catherine and Terry traipse through snow, Jack tugs Olivia along on his leash.
Mommy, Jack found something!
What is it?
As Jack paws at the snow, Olivia wipes at it with her mittens. Catherine uncovers an engraved stone tablet.
Our beloved dog, Sally.
What is it, Mommy?
A dog is buried here. Sally, my mother talked about a dog I had when I was a little girl. I don't remember the dog, but her name was Sally.
It's your dog, Mommy. That's why Jack and I found it.
No, darling, it couldn't be. Let's go, Olivia. We should start walking back.
In her purple down coat, Olivia heads off ahead of the two adults.
She's so independent.
Olivia will always be the most important person to me. It's funny, I don't know where it comes from. The closeness I feel. Olivia's taught me to live in the present. It's this great gift that small children give to you. There's no future to a child. There's only what is here and now in front of you.
They walk side by side. Terry rubs his leather-gloved hand against her fluffy mitten. As Catherine strides ahead, he reaches weakly after her. Back on the cottage roof, snow whips past Charles as he looks out over the water. Noting the water's increasing choppiness, he checks his watch and scowls against the cold. On Pumpkin Island, Terry and the others return to the dock. The boat is gone. Catherine shoots a concerned glance at Terry, then follows his gaze across the inlet. The boat's adrift a few yards ashore. Terry jogs onto the dock, followed by Jack. As he stares at the unmanned boat, Catherine hastens after him, carrying Olivia. Standing in the snowy wind, Terry pulls off his gloves, scarf, and jacket.
What's happening?
Terry, be careful! Water's freezing!
In his street clothes, he hops into the water.
Terry! Terry! Oh.
He swims for the boat.
What's going on? Where is he? Is he in the water?
Terry reaches the boat. Gripping a corner at the stern, he walks in the neck-high water with the boat in tow. On the dock, Catherine puts Olivia down. She watches and waits as Terry slowly guides the boat back toward them. Terry's lips pull tight as he strains.
Where's Terry? Is he all right?
As the boat inches to within reach of the dock, Catherine helps pull it in. Terry slumps on board.
Put this on.
As Olivia gets into her life vest, Terry feebly yanks the motor starter cord. Catherine drapes his jacket on him.
My hands are frozen.
As Terry curls up, Catherine lifts Olivia on board.
Okay, sit down, baby.
Her mother struggles to yank the starter cord. After a second attempt, she lets go and sits opposite Olivia.
Don't worry, everything will be okay.
She pushes off with an oar. As she starts to row with the pair, she loses her grip on one, quickly scoops it out of the water, and yanks off her mittens. She resumes rowing.
We'll be home soon. But I need you to lie next to Terry to help keep him warm.
As Catherine strains at the oars, Olivia and Jack huddle around Terry. The rowboat pitches on the choppy water. As the snowy wind picks up, the men at the cottage work on the roof. In the boat, Jack cowers by Olivia. Charles spots the boat on the water. Only Catherine's form is visible. He watches her working the oars alone.
Here, grab the rope, will you?
As Charles grips his safety line, Catherine continues struggling to row. The oars dip into the water. The boat now floats just yards from the cottage shoreline. Charles hurries down the dock steps. As the wind whips Catherine's hair in her face, Charles reaches the water's edge. He throws off his gloves and jacket. Catherine's rowing grows fatigued. As Charles wades into the water within feet of the boat, Catherine stops using one oar completely. Jack watches the newcomer, and Olivia lies curled on top of Terry. Now, Charles lays his hands on the bow. Catherine rests as he guides the boat ashore. The keel slides up onto the land, and Jack bounds off. Charles takes Olivia in his arms and seats her safely on the leaves. He then takes Catherine in a cradled hold and carries her to her daughter. In the boat, Terry shifts to sit up under his jacket. On the shore, Charles withdraws from the mother and daughter. He glances at Terry, then returns his gaze to the parent and child. As Terry looks on, Charles bows his head and shuts his mouth in a rumpled frown. Later, inside the cottage, Terry crosses a cozy guest room as he pulls on a long-sleeved t-shirt.
Come in.
It's Lawrence.
Feeling better?
Yeah. Hot shower thawed me out pretty good. Yeah, thank you.
Good, good. One of the men would like to talk to you.
Sure.
As the silver-haired driver leaves, Charles steps into view. Wearing his coat, he peers back after Lawrence, then faces Terry.
He's driving us back.
You dry enough?
Yeah. The other guys wanted me to ask you for our money. I said we could wait if you can't pay it now.
Oh, no, no, of course, sure.
Several bills lie on a dresser.
Would 100 for each of you be enough?
Oh, yeah, more than enough.
Okay, well, it's still a little wet from the lake. There you go.
Charles turns to go.
No, wait, please.
The grizzled worker stops.
Do you remember the man who was caretaker here? You knew him once. I'm his son.
Charles looks into Terry's eyes. Terry bows his head, then faces Charles with a sheepish gaze.
You and I have been gone a long time, but we've both come back. In the hospital, there are presents for the children. They have your name on them.
My name?
Charles Wentworth.
Charles shifts uneasily on his feet.
I will be back tomorrow.
No, I can use the help.
I'm sorry.
Charles exits past Olivia and Jack, who stand just outside Terry's open door. Terry watches her. Now in the workshop, he wears a rugged bib front apron as he paints the sled's runners bright red.
Come on in.
It's Warren. He shuts the door behind him.
You sure California can survive this long without you, son?
I tried to help your brother. Guess he couldn't handle it.
I want to show you something.
Terry removes his apron. Outside, Charles crouches on a cottage roof measuring a shingle.
He called me for a ride this morning.
Terry and Warren watch nearby.
It's the first thing he's asked me for in 5 years. I don't want anything to happen to him. I don't want to lose him. He was my brother long before he had anything to do with these people out here.
apart, and we have no right to keep them apart.
When your father first told me that she might be coming up here, I asked him if he knew what kind of woman she'd grown into. And of course he didn't. Well, I'm worried that she might be like her mother. She might hurt him. Can you understand that?
Our view slowly circles the two men standing by the lake as they return their gaze toward the roof.
I took them for a ride on the carousel.
I know. I was there.
Warren shoots Terry a sly look, then glances off.
Now, you may have been right all along, Terry, but I'm still concerned that my brother won't be able to face her.
Tight-lipped, Warren eyes Terry. On the roof, Charles presses on a shingle with gloved hands. Terry starts down a gentle incline toward the lake. Later, Terry faces Charles as he mixes cement in a bucket.
We sat in the car and waited for you to come back that night.
Yeah, well, I couldn't live with myself.
It was an accident.
It was a mother and her child. I came back here, though. I used to sleep on people's boats in the harbor. I hid in the woods by the golf course.
Nodding, Charles gazes toward the lake.
I was here. I was here hiding in the pump house when the movers came. I watched them.
As Terry listens attentively, Charles shifts on his feet.
I never came back here after that.
He looks off wistfully.
They took everything important.
Not everything.
Terry swallows hard under Charles' gaze.
My father saved some photographs of you with your daughter.
Charles drops his gaze. Turning away, he scrapes the side of the bucket with a trowel, mixing the cement. He passes a wheelbarrow and stands beside some garden tools. Now, Olivia and Jack sit on the sled as Catherine pulls it across the ice. Wearing skates, she hesitantly steps backward, dragging the sled in a circle. Jack hops off and follows alongside. On a bench, Terry puts on gloves. Catherine helps Olivia to a seat beside him, then extends her hand. Grinning, he takes it. Catherine leads Terry onto the ice, then gently lets go. He skates, waving his arms forward. Attempting a stiff turn, his left foot buckles and he drops onto his side. Later, Terry rolls across the ice, then takes another spill. Catherine helps him to his feet. Later, as she tries to hoist him up, he drops back down. Olivia shares the bench with Jack. On the ice, Catherine and Terry spin hand in hand. Rocking forward unsteadily, Terry clings to Catherine, then pulls her close to his body. They smile at each other, their mouths inches apart. Catherine teasingly draws closer, then takes his hands, pulling him forward. Terry stumbles as they face the bench. He plops beside Olivia. The little girl kisses his temple. Placing an arm around her, Terry pats her elbow. Catherine looks on admiringly. Later, at the dining room table, as she reads to Olivia by candlelight, Terry and Lawrence watch.
So every year on December 25th, we celebrate the birth of Christ.
C is for Christmas.
Christmas.
What do you want for Christmas, Olivia?
I don't know.
Oh, well, I'll bet Santa Claus knows.
All right, I better get this angel in her pajamas.
Just a little while more.
It's late. You've had a busy day.
I live over there, Terry.
Catherine carries Olivia to the door.
For me, too.
Terry and Catherine swap a smile across the room. As she heads out, her expression sobers.
Good night.
Bye-bye, pumpkin.
Nighttime. In the workshop, Terry gazes down at the photo of himself as a boy in his mother's arms. He smiles. Swallowing hard, he sets down the picture and answers his cell phone.
Hello?
Terry, it's Bill. Listen, I've been all over Wendy to get those contracts back from you.
Yeah, I'm working on them.
Well, she says she sent them to you days ago.
I'm doing them right now.
Listen, I know it's not a good time, but...
Well, I'm almost done.
He opens the door for Catherine.
You're busy, I'll just leave this.
No. Come in.
Bill, I'm... I'll get them to you tomorrow.
Catherine holds a towel-covered plate.
Some pie.
Thank you.
Lawrence survived it, but he has a cast iron stomach.
Got a fork here somewhere.
Catherine removes her coat.
You fixed the sled here with your father's tools.
Yeah. Anything that doesn't fall apart an hour after I fix it is a miracle. My father was here. He could do it 5 times better and 1/5 the time.
Terry gazes down at half a pie on a plate. He tastes a forkful.
It's good.
Catherine grins. Glancing around the room, she leans on a workbench. Terry meets her intent gaze, then approaches.
I've been thinking about what you said to me. About how Olivia's taught you to live in the present.
Catherine straightens.
How do you live?
The future, always. You're only as good as your next deal.
It's a tough way to live.
Yeah, I know.
Terry comes closer, then meets her gaze.
I didn't used to think so.
He takes Catherine's hand. Fidgeting, she grips his.
This is the future, too. Being here with you.
What do you mean?
As they gaze longingly into each other's eyes, Terry slides closer.
I never knew it, but I've been waiting a long time for this, and I've been looking for you.
Shutting her eyes, Catherine leans in.
Where?
Terry cups her face in his hand.
Everywhere.
He brings her face close to his. As Catherine's lips part, Terry kisses her. Drawing back, she covers her mouth.
Maybe I shouldn't have done that.
He caresses her cheek.
It was the right thing to do.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Catherine shakes free of his caress.
This is hard for me.
Turning on her heel, she takes a step back. Catherine smooths her hair and leans on the desk. Under Terry's gaze, she shrugs.
When I adopted Olivia, I built this small world for us where I could love and protect her. I realize I've been protecting myself, and I'm scared to let anyone in.
Catherine, that's what my father did.
Terry's eyes dart as he glances off.
He built this small world for himself. Only he worked himself to death because he never let anyone in. Not even his own son. Maybe he was afraid.
Terry steps forward.
I don't know.
He smooths Catherine's hair with his hands.
In my way, I think for the last 20 years I've been doing the exact same things, and I don't want to continue to make that mistake.
As Catherine lifts her hand behind Terry's neck, the couple gazes deeply into each other's eyes. Their lips meet and they share a long kiss. Catherine buries her face on Terry's shoulder, her arm caressing his back. Later, they step into the cottage's foyer. Olivia meets them on the stairs in her bathrobe.
I'm in my pajamas already for bed.
Aren't you something?
Catherine lifts her daughter.
I want Terry to tell me a story tonight.
Well, I've never told a bedtime story before. I think I have an idea.
Terry picks her up.
You ready?
Yep.
You ready to try it?
As he carries Olivia upstairs, Catherine smiles to herself. Later, Olivia sleeps beside the Christmas tree. Terry lies nearby.
Look who's sleeping.
Catherine lingers in the doorway, blanket in hand. Meeting her gaze, Terry gingerly gets to his feet and crosses toward her.
I told her a story about a bird who invades mailboxes and carries away all the unwanted mail. The bills and the sad letters. There was a child who befriended the bird, and together they read all the letters, rewrote them, and took out all the sad parts.
How does it end?
I'm not sure.
Maybe it's better that way.
Descending a few steps, Catherine crouches beside Olivia. She covers her with a floral patterned blanket.
For the last 2 nights, she's wanted to sleep here.
She kisses her own fingertips, then touches them to Olivia's head. Tiptoeing back to the garland-fringed doorway, she joins Terry's side. She kisses him, then leads him off. Olivia sleeps soundly beside the tree. Later, downstairs, Terry gazes pensively toward a fire burning in the hearth. He looks up as Catherine enters. She hands him a coffee mug, then slouches to a seat on the sofa beside him. He rubs her shoulder as she nuzzles his neck.
Thank you.
Catherine squeezes Terry's waist and glances up at him.
Would you do something for me?
What?
I want you to go back in your mind to your earliest memory.
I don't have a good memory.
Just try. Everybody says that. Just try. You have to try.
I remember our family doctor sitting on the end of my bed telling me I had measles. I must have been about 6 or 7, I guess.
Shutting her eyes, she shrugs her shoulder.
Go back farther.
As Terry strokes Catherine's hair, her gaze drifts.
I remember standing in the fog on my first day of school. I was wearing my shiny shoes. My mother said I call my patent leather shoes my shiny shoes. I love them.
I remember those shoes.
Terry stares intently.
Of course you do. You were standing right beside me.
Catherine kisses his cheek, then shuts her eyes with a contented smile.
The shoes had elastic straps that held them on.
She opens her eyes, and her smile fades.
The right strap was loose, and the shoe kept falling off.
She lifts her head from his chest.
You couldn't know that.
Her mouth hangs open.
Tell me how you know that.
Terry averts his gaze.
I sprained my ankle, and the bandage had stretched the elastic on my right shoe. You couldn't have known that.
Terry's lips part as he meets Catherine's gaze. He reaches inside his pocket and takes out a paper. He unfolds it. It's the fingerprint card.
On my 9th birthday, I was given a fingerprinting kit.
Catherine frowns quizzically.
This is you, Catherine.
She stares.
You were here, in this house. I knew you when you were a little girl. And this is your father. You were here with him.
What are you talking about?
When you were a little girl, you came to Rose Point with your parents for the holidays.
No, I never came here. I never knew my father.
Yes, you did. Your mother divorced him and she took you away. But he's still here.
She shakes her head.
You're not making any sense.
Catherine, the man who helped us the other day, the one who carried you from the boat, his name is Charles.
Stop it, Terry. Stop it.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Stop it.
I've been wanting to tell you. Catherine.
You didn't say anything.
I was trying to do the right thing.
By keeping it from me? I feel like a fool. I went on and on about never having been here.
No, I'm so sorry.
You knew. My own father stood right next to me, and you knew.
I was just trying to respect his wishes.
And what about mine? Did you think I wouldn't care?
I didn't know what to think. There wasn't any plan. When you first got here, I wanted to tell you, but then you seemed so happy, I was worried it would upset you.
Just please. Go, please, Terry. Just go.
Wrestling free of his grasp, Catherine heads upstairs. Terry stays back, arms at his sides. Daytime. Terry carries his briefcase to his car as he talks on his cell.
I seem to have settled everything here. So I'm on a flight this afternoon. I'll be in the office in the morning. We'll see you then.
He places his briefcase and duffel bag in the open trunk. Gazing toward the yard, he spies Olivia playing with Jack. The little girl wears a striped knit cap and pink scarf. As the dog paws at a patch of snow, the girl helps him dig. Terry hesitates, then makes his way over. Jack buries his nose in the snow.
Hello, Olivia.
Terry!
As Olivia stands, Terry kneels in front of her. Inside the cottage, Catherine draws open a curtain and watches.
I wanted to come and say goodbye. I'm sorry. I have to go home now. It's time to get back to my job.
Olivia removes one of her thick gloves. Reaching out, she pats Terry's forehead. Catherine watches pensively from the window. Terry shuts his eyes as Olivia's spread fingers explore his face. Blinking, the little girl pats under his chin. She feels around his cheek and forehead, then withdraws her hand.
Goodbye, Terry McQuinn.
Olivia throws her arms around him and he returns her embrace. Shutting his eyes, Terry lifts a hand to the back of Olivia's cap. He blinks as he presses his face close to hers. Olivia stares past Terry as he straightens.
Merry Christmas.
The little girl gives a tight-lipped smile. Catherine blinks, gazing from the window. Terry's black-clad reflection recedes into the glass as he crosses the yard. Glancing down, Catherine lets the curtain fall. Later, in the city, the town car drives toward the alley. Peering out the window, Terry pulls to a stop. Vagrants in long coats and knit caps warm themselves by a smoldering barrel. Terry rolls down his window.
Charles!
Charles steps away from a companion and approaches the car. Heaving a misty breath, he leans into the passenger window.
I'm heading back to L.A. this afternoon.
Staring blankly, Charles smiles politely.
Well, it was nice to see you again.
Terry nods, then looks down pensively and bites his lip.
I told Catherine everything. She knows who you are.
Charles averts his gaze and heaves a sigh.
I wish you hadn't done that.
Fidgeting, he shakes his head.
I didn't do it for you.
As Charles squarely meets his gaze, Terry reaches into his coat.
This belongs to you.
He holds out the framed picture of Charles with Catherine as a little girl.
I think my father would want you to have it. They look very happy together, don't they?
Charles' gaze locks on the photo.
I remember that. Do you?
Gripping the frame, Charles straightens. He takes a long look at Terry, pats the inside of the passenger door, and turns away. Terry rolls up the window. As Charles makes his way back down the alley, the town car drives off. A couple of vagrants beside a dumpster watch Charles. Now in his office building, Terry and Bill walk up a staircase.
You pulled through for us again, Terry. Percy is in love with the deal. Ecstatic.
Well, that's good. I'm glad.
That's a big boost for you up the partnership ladder.
Terrific.
Now they listen to a speakerphone.
I hate it. It is the worst contract I've ever seen. I told you 5 times, a separate trailer for my gym. I want to see an acceptable contract by noon. I'm not being rude. This is just how I feel.
Well, Terry, I'm sure you can handle it. I'll talk to you later. And don't forget lunch with Switzer, huh?
As Bill heads out, Terry stands by a window overlooking the city skyline. Now, Warren's Bronco pulls to a stop on Serenity Cottage's snow-covered drive. Charles gazes wistfully out the passenger window. As his brother nods encouragingly, Charles opens the door and steps outside. Thrusting his hands in his jacket pockets, he takes a look back. Warren nods again, and Charles proceeds onto the porch past the mailbox. As he approaches the front door, Warren watches expectantly. He lowers his pensive gaze. Now in a conference room, Bill leads a meeting.
This could be a big problem. We could lose the client. Mary?
Frowning, a black-haired businesswoman looks away. Bill leans on the table.
Robbins?
A young man looks up.
I don't know, Bill.
The boss scans his workers' faces.
Terry, what do you think?
Terry swivels absently in his chair.
I think...
His gaze falls on the rumpled fingerprint card.
Terry? Terry?
As Bill's brow furrows, Terry stares unblinking.
It's story time in my house.
Now, near the skating pond, Catherine talks on a cell phone.
Merry Christmas, Terry.
Catherine.
I woke you. I'm sorry. I didn't even think about the time difference.
No, I was awake.
I wanted you to know we're all here. My father, all of us.
Charles ties Olivia's skates.
I was hoping for that.
Well, thank you. It's because of you.
I'm so glad it worked out.
Terry, I was wrong. I needed time to think. When you left, I realized everything. And I should never have let you go.
Catherine, are you sure?
I'm sure.
Catherine's eyes dart and her lips tremble.
I've fallen in love with you.
Olivia waddles over in her heavy jacket.
I know your life's out there now.
She tugs on her mother's hand.
I know.
Not anymore. Turn around.
What?
Just turn around.
She does. In the distance, Terry approaches, his cell phone to his ear. As he hangs up, Catherine lowers her phone and rushes to meet him. Charles watches, chuckling, as his daughter dashes across the snow. She meets Terry's grin with a big smile and hugs him tightly. They separate, then share a brief kiss. Meanwhile, Charles and Olivia hold hands as they skate in a circle across the frozen pond. Catherine and Terry make their way forward, their arms locked. Warren gets up from his seat beside Lawrence. As he greets Catherine and Terry at the edge of the pond, Charles and Olivia skate over. Fade to black.